Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen, and this evening my guest for the show is three of our monastery vehicles, although actually technically my guests are three of my fellow monks who are here to talk about three of our monastery vehicles. All our vehicles, all the cars we drive here at the monastery have been donated to us, generously given from folks in the Sangha over the many, many years. And we find ourselves with an aging fleet of vehicles. And as we looked at putting word out to the Sangha that we could use more recent vehicles, we realized, you know, our vehicles are sort of part of the family, and they have such great stories to tell, and sort of where they came from and what they've done for us over the years is really kind of a fun story. So I enrolled three of my fellow monks to help talk about each of our vehicles. Really, all of them have great stories to tell, but we chose three for the evening. So Dave, maybe you could start us off.
Well, I'm going to tell you about the green van, which is one of my favorites. The green van was actually donated by a monk, and I don't know how long ago. It must have been, 8 or 10 years ago, probably. And my favorite story about the green van is it was actually donated in Atlanta. And so we were going to North Carolina for a retreat. Me and another monk flew into Atlanta, picked up the van, drove it up. It was on 9/11, or actually that was 9/10, the day before 9/11 that happened. The next day 9/11 happened, I was planning on driving it back all the way across country to the monastery, and I even brought my little dog Rhea with me to accompany me. Then 9/11 happened. Sherry was actually in the air while 9/11 was going on. Last plane to make it to Asheville. We had our retreat, and then we all piled into the van and headed our cross country. And it was took like 3 or 4 days. It was probably the most fun I've ever had in my entire life. So, and since it's been back, it's been just a real trooper. It's got, I don't know, maybe around 150,000 miles on it. Many of our listeners actually probably have experienced the green van because it has been back and forth to the airport I don't know how many times, and used to be to the airport, more recent years to the BART station, has ferried hundreds of people here on retreat. It's been a real trooper.
So, Dave, you got to tell people about, to me, this just like illustrates how we keep our cars going. So, I don't know what, a couple months ago, suddenly the backup light stopped working.
Yeah, it was this odd thing that was going on with the transmission because the switches in the transmission, we couldn't put it in park, and it was just the whole thing. And so what we ended up doing is so we put a little toggle switch on it. So the backup switch no longer operates automatically. If you want to go backwards, you got to flip a little toggle switch, and then the lights will come on for you. It actually just, I was just driving the other day and broke down in Manteca, which is about an hour from here. And, you know, just had a whole adventure with the green van, getting it fixed and getting home. And it's kind of one of the family, really, as they all are.
Yeah, yeah. It's really true. Thanks, Dave. So next we've got Melinda.
And I realized we could talk the whole show about any one of these vehicles because we identify it as the green van because we used to have a gray van and we had the gray van and the green van, but we still call it the green van. The gray van was donated, the Dodge Dakota truck before that was donated, the two Ford trucks before that were donated, and it's just really, and yeah, the truck that is known as the yellow truck, and I was telling a monk today, I don't know how it got that name, but it's really kind of beige-ish. But it's 30 years old this year, and it only has 108,000 miles, and I think that's because the person who donated it, who is an amazing friend of the monastery who used to live down the street and did all kinds of wonderful things for us right from the beginning of the beginning days, moved away and in the process donated us her truck. And it is, when I think of it, I think of that kid's story, the little engine that could, because it marches around. It's not a big truck, but it can carry a really good load. We put a rack on it at one point, actually when the red truck died. We took the rack off that and put it on the yellow truck. And, you know, we just, I think, have an enormous amount of affection for our vehicles and keep them running as long as we possibly can. And the little yellow truck, the 1981 Toyota, continues to serve us like a real trooper.
One of the things that I love about her so much is that she's really the around-the-property vehicle. You know, anyone who's been to the monastery knows that there is a road. There's a main road that goes really around much of the whole property, but you can't just drive any old car over the roads. I mean, they're dirt roads, and they, especially when the rain comes, you know, they get divots in them. It's much like being in Zambia, really. But that's the car that can make it around all the roads. So, you know, that's when we need to take wood out to a hermitage for a wood-burning stove, it goes in the yellow truck. When we need to deliver lumber somewhere, it goes in the yellow truck. When we go to the dump every week, it goes in the yellow truck. So she's really, yeah, she's done us a great service. And Sequoia's got our third vehicle.
Yes, I have the one car that's not referred to by its color. I hear it most often referred to as the wagon. Apparently, it's also called the bucket, and that would be because of the letters on its license plate, BKP. This is a 20-year-old Ford Escort wagon that has actually over 200,000 miles on it. And it came to the monastery in 1991. It was a gift from one of the neighbors. It had been his mom's car. And it has been a very dependable and wonderful car at the monastery. And just in the way we care for everything here, she's been cared for. And as her visors disintegrated, they were replaced by plywood visors. And the handle on one of the windows fell off, and it was replaced by a wooden door handle. So she has a lot of character. She's carried a lot of groceries in her day, and she's also been a learning tool for many monks that arrive at the monastery and do not know how to drive a stick shift. So the blue bucket or wagon has been the teaching tool, and she's been very forgiving.
I have to say, this vehicle is a one-of-a-kind. You know, occasionally you'll get a lemon. I don't know what the opposite of a lemon is. An orange, maybe. But this one, a peach, Melinda said. But this one has been unbelievable. We've been waiting for it to quit since, like, 1998. It just keeps on going and just never has any problems. And it just goes and goes and goes and goes.
So if you have a Ford Escort you want to donate, we're in the market. We actually often joke that we just need a fleet of Ford Escorts and we'd be all set, because that car really has done us well. So as you can see, we really do. We take amazingly good care of our cars. We care about them. They kind of become part of the monastery family, as we've said. So, and it is true that as cars get older and older, at a certain point, we can't maintain them anymore, and we have seen a few of them have to say goodbye, and a few of them are starting to be towards that mileage and taking more money than it's worth keeping them on the road and that sort of thing. So just putting word out to the Sangha that if there's anyone, you know, you're upgrading your car or you no longer need one or for whatever reason, yeah, Melinda was just saying, especially a truck. We're in the market for a good, you know, later year, or do you say earlier year? I'm not sure how you say that, but a newer, younger than 30 years, let's say. yeah, we're definitely in the market for vehicles that have low mileage and more recent and in good working order. So, and of course, we're a 501c3. We're a nonprofit, so it would be tax deductible. So contact us, information@livingcompassion.org, if you feel moved to look into that option. So I think that's it, Michael.
Great. That was very fun. Very fun.
Have a great show.
All righty. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Max. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
I was chuckling all the way through
there. Oh, such memories are locked up in those vehicles. My goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, they really are friends. And, you know, just having people refer to the, you know, the blue truck and the red truck and the gray van and the, you know, it just takes me right back to that era and what was going on then and who gave us that. And, it's good. We have an unusual relationship with most things, exemplified by our relationship with vehicles. Yeah.
That's
so
great.
You know, it's kind
That's
of like great. A, you know, you have a pet and you can't keep the pet any longer and you just really hope it goes to a good home. We would do the same thing with vehicles. You know, if somebody wants their old vehicle to, or their not so old vehicle to go to a really good home, we have one for it.
Great. I was remembering my own memories in those vehicles, so it's very fun.
Yeah, making those trips from the Bay Area to the monastery, yeah.
Yes. And I have one announcement for us tonight.
Only one. My goodness gracious.
Only one.
You must be coming to the end of the year, huh?
Yes. Tuesday, December 27th through January 1st, that's a Sunday, is the one, the only Conscious Compassionate New Year's Retreat with you, Sherry, and the monks at Santa Sabina Center in San Rafael, California, in the beautiful hills of Marin County.
And I am shocked that we are still announcing that, because it is so close to full that I actually thought it was full. So if there's somebody out there who says, oh, I've been waffling and not really certain, get thee to the computer.
Yes. And it includes daily workshops and meditation, scenic walks, individual guidance with Sherry, yoga, and delicious vegetarian food.
Mm. Good time.
And I can vouch for each one of those.
Yeah, they're all good, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And we have callers here.
Good. Let's hear from them.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
You sound a little out of breath there.
Oh, not really. I'm just downstairs trying to find my way into a quiet room.
So what's going on?
Well, I think in my first two retreats that I was down there, I didn't really experience backlash.
Uh-huh.
I don't think, at least in retrospect, I can say I didn't, because I'm getting it this time for certainly. And it's had me a bit underwater for, I remember a few days after the retreat, something was going on, but I turned to my wife and said, well, the retreat's officially over.
Uh-huh.
It's going to have a joke. But,
it's officially really begun.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Yeah.
It's been getting me on a couple things. One of them is physical stuff, and I'm just becoming more and more convinced that conditioning, it seems to me, has the power to make someone hurt or make someone sick.
Yes.
Or anything like that, because it's just been really weird the way it's been going on since I've been home.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the mechanics of it are, how that actually works.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched it in myself over the years. I've watched it in other people. A person gets really upset, and we know that affects the immune system. And the next thing you know, something is injured or the person is sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's that's definitely what's going on with us.
Yeah,
I think even the medical establishment now says that stress is at the root of just a whole range of diseases that they've identified.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm reading a book right now by a vegan ultra triathlete, a guy who runs the long distance, and he has a whole nutrition thing that I'm reading about. It's interesting, and he claims that stress in many different forms. He says it's his perspective, whatever, that most of the stress that people are under is nutritional, and that the stuff they're putting in their bodies is just entirely the wrong stuff, and then it's a repeating cycle of not sleeping well, then waking up with caffeine, and then feeling drowsy later and grabbing a sugary snack, and then just this giant cycle of stuff like that.
The only thing, I would agree with him, but to me, that is a result, not a cause. because the cause is the voice in the head,
yeah,
that is talking the person into those behaviors and then, of course, punishing them afterwards for participating in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I've been planning since before the retreat to go to a concert on this past Saturday. And then several days before, I got this nasty cold, and I had these weird things I don't get. My back was just like various muscles were kind of like piano wire, and it was just really uncomfortable. And I heard, gee, I think I'll stay home, or I should stay home and rest kind of thing float through, but I really wanted to go, and I did, and it was great because all the sweat there purged it out of my body or something, because I felt a lot better since I went, which to me is more evidence that everything was just however it does it, conditioning, making me feel a certain way or whatever.
Yes, and that's such a big part of it, isn't it, that something happens and the voices kick in. Okay, well, what's going on? What does that mean? What happened? Why is this happening? And, you know, it's all going to come back to what you've done wrong, whether it's that you ate the wrong thing or you're experiencing stress, right? And again, if we just pull the whole thing back, if there were none of those voices that are, again, talking us into stuff, scaring us, making us anxious and upset and all that, what would the body's experience be? Because wouldn't we sleep better? And wouldn't we want not to, mess ourselves up with caffeine and sugar and stuff like that? I think we would.
I think so.
If we were relaxed and happy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, I saw someone today who, I'd mentioned her once before, I think, someone who does cranial sacral work, and which I don't even understand how it works, but, and she says, she considers low back, and I've heard this not just from her, but from others, low back pain is a result of not feeling supported in general, in whatever. And while she was sort of encouraging me to find, the way I interpreted what she said was find someone external to me to support me, I more took it to mean supporting myself.
Exactly.
And I'm very grateful that the email class started today.
Yeah.
I totally am. I was just
with
like,
a good start, huh?
Oh, it is. It's and oh yeah.
So Chris, that reminds me of something else. So you and I take a different approach to things than a lot of people do. So I'm going to. It's wonderful if external people support me, but I'm not going to count on it because that's going to position me to be dependent upon somebody else and then basically victimized by the voices of karmic conditioning and self-hate because it won't go the way I want and it's not what I need and they don't understand me. So I'm going to look to myself to take care of myself. And that can include doing everything I can do to support my body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm going to, for me, the thing that made the most difference was Pilates and learning about my psoas and strengthening and allowing it to release. And once I learned how to do that, once the core is strong, my low back, my back is just never an issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can look like I'm going to a professional who's going to do something to or for me.
Mm-hmm.
But where it starts is with the attitude of mind that says, to my body, you're a good friend. You're really the best friend I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do anything to show my appreciation and take the very best care of you that I can all the time.
Yeah, and that's really key for me to hear right now because one trap I fall into over and over again is I just need to find this one exercise and then I'll do that, and then I'll be fixed, and then I'll have to, and then I can go unconscious again.
Right.
Oh, and I find myself leaning. Because I'm seeing lots of different people and taking their input and doing stuff, and eventually it'll come around to that.
Yes.
Of last time there, I'll do this, and then I'll be fixed.
Yeah.
And instead of rather establishing a lifelong relationship where I'm continually taking care of this body.
Yeah. Well, and I love the way you phrase that, because that's what people are being told all the time. What you want to do is get that whatever it is so that you can go unconscious.
Yes.
And, of course, you and I know, and a lot of other people who do awareness practice know, that's what the voices mean when they say, and then you'll be all right. And then you can put this behind you.
Yes.
And then you won't have to worry about it. What it's saying is, and then you will go unconscious.
Yes.
Be mine.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good, isn't it?
Yes.
Anything that causes us to come back to ourselves and make the choices that we want to make from the heart, that's a friend, even if it's a tweaky back or a head cold or anything else that's going on. If it
mm-hmm.
makes us choose ourselves, life, here, now, it's a friend.
Yes. Well, fabulous. That's
yeah.
just what I need to hear right now. That's
good. Then I can say to you, well, take good care of yourself, and you really will.
Yes. I need to make a big sign of that. I think I'm thinking about putting a big sign actually down by the front door or by the entryway. It's like not even a sign, like a long list under a piece of plastic. So I can come home from work and then go, okay, and then look at these things and think just reminders of how I want to be at home and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, now this is good because in this first, I can only guess you're in the C group of the email class.
I am, but I'm thinking about, I think when I went to the B group, it was kind of partly.
Oh, okay. So,
so I just do the B group.
Okay. Well, just so you can get a jump on on it, the assignment is to pick a practice, maybe something that you've been thinking about doing or considering doing, but you
mm-hmm.
haven't,
mm-hmm.
And commit to doing that for the next week. So you could
Ooh.
Just take that assignment and commit to doing it for the next month of the class. Then you can do the B class, but still have your reminder list outside the front
mm-hmm.
door and really support yourself in that way, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you soon.
You bet.
Bye.
Good night. Good night, Mike.
Good night. Thank you for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving on. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lorraine from D.C.
Hey, Lorraine.
How are you?
Good, and you?
Good.
What's going on?
I haven't called in a while, and I'm calling, and...
And that might be enough, huh?
Yeah, that's what I get to tell myself all day. It's like, don't try to think of something to say, just call.
So what's going on is I'm calling into the radio show.
I'm calling in, yes.
Yeah.
Things go up and down, and I'm calling in anyway.
Yes. Yes. Can you say a little bit about up and down?
I got laid off.
Ooh.
And there's not many jobs, so I'm thinking of it as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just trying to not get depressed or not get discouraged by that and figure out what to do next.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what are you looking at? What's your
I just
your
mostly
strategy?
Want to finish my degree. I don't want to really work too hard. Cuz if I get I'm almost done with my master's. So if I get that, then I could get a job that's up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to try just doing odd jobs until then. And so I had one odd job come up. Watched a cat for a couple days. And I'm hoping that I'll get more stuff like that to
mm-hmm.
hide me over so I can keep studying and than be a real grown-up with a real right.
So you really are seeing it as an opportunity, not just a, well, this must be a spiritual opportunity because this is where I am, but it really is a, okay, I can find the jobs that I need to support myself, and I can use my time and energy for completing this degree that I want to have, and then get a job in a field that I'm really interested in. And I like that, be a grown-up.
Right. Is that good?
Yeah, that's good. What does that mean to you?
From the Enneagram class,
uh-huh.
I found out I tend to like to do nice things for people so that they'll be nice to me. And maybe being a grown-up might be just being nice to me or just being nice without an ulterior motive. I'm not sure.
Not sacrificing yourself, but really being present to the decisions you make and choosing wisely for all concerned?
Yes. I knew you would know how to put it.
Well, that's very good, isn't it? It's that that element of taking responsibility.
Yes.
So there's a lot riding on this. We need a grown-up. Oh, okay, well, I can be a grown-up.
And I can notice quicker when the little scared kid gets in charge, and I know now to be compassionate to her instead of feeling like that means I'm doing something wrong.
Precisely. In fact, what we learn to do, what you're pointing at so clearly is, hey, little kid, you managed to get us through everything up until now. So thank you. Thank you for learning to do what was needed for us to survive. Now I'm going to be a grown-up, and you get to be a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be up to you any longer. You can just enjoy life and let me enjoy you, and very grateful for everything that you've done. Because otherwise, what a miserable, here's a little kid trying to live a grown-up life, trying to make it in a grown-up world, and then getting punished for having done the best that she knows how to do to make it work.
Right.
See how unfair that is and how sad it is. Now you can kind of throw a party for her. A little kid retirement party.
Right. It's really scary, but I'm plodding on.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really scary. Do you do the, are you keeping up with the recording and listening practice?
Not as well as I did at first, but still am. Yep, still.
Okay, because that's going to be really important. Because everybody, we need the wisdom of the mentor all the time,
mm-hmm.
every day, even when things are just going beautifully, perfectly for us. We still want that wisdom, love, and compassion to be the foundation of our lives. When things are scary, challenging, then we really need it, because otherwise the tendency, what we're trained to do, is bail out on these little people and leave them to try to survive in really difficult circumstances. So it would really take care of that little person and everybody else in you to get back in very close contact with the mentor just for support and companionship. You know, somebody, so that you're sure that you have somebody a little older and wiser to be walking along the path with you.
Okay. The voices tell me I have so much good stuff on those two tapes I've already filled up that I don't need to make any more. But I can see from what you're saying, that's just making the little kid not have any voice.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's like, little kid, you've had such a great time already. You don't need any love or attention or comfort or caring or any of that. You've had such a good life.
He really still does want some attention.
Oh, of course. Of course. We all need that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's it's your heart. It's living from your heart. And that's what we want to be doing all the time. Everybody, whether they know it or not, or resist it or fight it or anything, believe the voices are true when the voices say it's not the case. Everybody wants understanding. Everybody wants to feel special and important and valued and appreciated. That's what it means to live in the heart. Live in, in our tradition, to live in Gassho. That my heart and your heart are one. Live in life from that place of love and connection. Need. And I'm convinced, of course, people are dying for the lack of. That be from the lack of? Whatever preposition works in there.
Right.
Yeah, people are dying because they don't have that, because the voices have cut them off from that source of loving kindness.
Like the first caller, just keep trying to give it to ourselves.
Like the what?
Like the first caller was.
Yes. Saying. Yes. Exactly. That's what practice is, right? We are learning to become that conscious, compassionate awareness for all of the aspects of the personality of this human being, all of the folks who have suffered and felt alone and isolated and abandoned. We are moving into the place of the Buddha, unconditionally loving and accepting Buddha that can embrace them and heal them.
I have a big smile. That's great.
Yeah, me too. That's great. All right. Will you keep in touch and let us know how you're doing, okay?
I will. Thank you so much for everything.
You are so welcome. Are you in the email class, this email class?
Not this time. I thought it would be good to be financially good to not do it. I don't know.
If that's the case, then drag out the old one and do it.
That's what I did. Yes, what I did. I was like,
very good.
I've got my old one and I've got the money one, and good. I've got lots of notes and lots of things.
Good. So you'll be with us in solidarity.
Yes. Yeah.
Good.
It was like I wasn't not going to not do it, but I was going to do what I already have.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Okay.
Way to take care of ourselves.
Good.
Good. All right. More soon.
Okie doke. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks,
good
Michael.
Night. You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Lorraine. You're listening to Open Air. And Sherry, I forgot our reminders at the beginning of the show, and that's to focus on one topic in about 5 minutes, please.
And we've been doing well so far.
Yes, great. And we have another caller here.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Mary Jane from San Francisco.
Hey, Mary Jane.
Hello.
What's going on?
Oh, I just had to call. Basically, there was so much. I think what I've been noticing is just what happened, how does conditioning talk me out of things? So I just wanted to see that whole process and didn't want to let it succeed. So I just had to call in.
Very good. That's a great motivation. Anything that conditioning is talking us out of or making a campaign for, oh, you don't need to, or there's some reason why you don't need that, that's the thing we have to do.
Yeah, and part of it was I had called in a few weeks ago about kind of this young part who was coming up through this project I'm working on, and I also talked about it on my guidance call, but the story was kind of I hadn't done enough work with her to be able to check in or to call back.
So that made you a little suspicious right there, huh?
Yeah, and actually there was a tweet today that was kind of like this. It was, how conditioning pulls you into the story is more interesting than the story.
Oh, yes, that is a good one, isn't it?
And what I'm seeing is that in many aspects of my life, conditioning, there's kind of this, you're not trying hard enough, and that's why you're not being successful, or you don't get permission to, like, you don't get to go into door B until you've done all these things first, and it kind of quarantines me in all these process and all these things in my life.
Go ahead.
No, that's all.
Well, and kind of just under the radar, right? I mean, this has been going on all your life, and you're catching on to it now, right?
Yeah.
It sets up all these standards, and they somehow make sense that you can't do that until you've done that. And what we never, almost never, takes us a long time to get to the point of saying, why? Who says? Where's the rule book? Clearly, there's a rule book that I'm being critiqued from. Where is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can feel this is a big topic because I think I'm even more, I feel a lot of sensation right now and not like more than I have when I'm typically on a phone call, when I'm calling.
It's like, you have really blown it now.
Okay?
You were not supposed to make that call, and now this is what you're talking about? This is really unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like I really need to see this because I've just been seeing, you know, since I was on the deepening practice retreat, the slight pull of conditioning saying you're losing consciousness, you're not practicing enough. And I do notice sometimes, like, it was easier for me to meditate right after the retreat than it is now. So there's something there to observe, but it's also a lot of story that scares me because I don't want to be unconscious.
Well, of course, you know, if you would get upset because it said, you know, you're getting way too spiritual here. You know, you are getting out there. People are going to not be able to relate to you. You're not going to have any friends, okay? If that were upsetting to you, that's what it would be saying. But what's upsetting to you, because...
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's simple. It seems like we talked about this on another topic, but I'm not certain. If every time it said that, your response was, thank you, I'm feeling really present right now. It would stop saying it. Now, it would come up with something else, but it would stop using that one. Because what's happening, of course, is it says you're losing consciousness. You're not as present as you could be, and it pulls you into that's really true because it was easier for me to, okay, and it's got you. But if you just do the Buddha smile and go, ah, thank you. Thank you for the reminder. I'm very present now. Oh, this is, that's very helpful. You win and it loses. See, it takes us a long time to catch on to what we know intellectually, but to catch on a day-to-day basis that the content is irrelevant. The content is only there because it's what you will fall for. It's what I will fall for. That's the content of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But that's so big. It's kind of what Alan Watts, you know, with his trying to kiss your own lips. It has that feel. It's so the world that we're in. How can I grasp that all of the issues that are issues for me are only issues for me because they're issues for me.
Mm-hmm.
They're not real. They're not important. They're not special. They don't mean anything. It's just that I'll get involved when those are paraded in front of me.
Yes.
It's almost, I mean, it's so big that it's kind of spooky, you know, to try to wrap our minds around. And the place that I go to with this, I don't know if it makes sense for anybody, but, you know, there's somebody really, 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 really unhappy in their life. Really unhappy in their life. And they, you know, people actually have the ability to die when they get unhappy enough with their life. And some people speed up the process to kill themselves if they're really unhappy in their lives. And to me, that's such a strong indication of how much we don't get that our lives are a complete fiction. That the content of our lives is completely irrelevant. I can't think of another way to say it. So if I don't like the life I'm living, there's nothing to stop me from going somewhere else and being a different person, living a different life. But it's a very unusual person who would ever do that. Because the structure that keeps a person locked into a particular karmic orientation to life won't let them consider that they could do that. You know, you have all these problems here. If you went somewhere else and became a different person, you wouldn't have those problems. But the problems are real. I can't do that. I can't just walk off and leave them. Of course we could. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're saying that you're not necessarily, at first I thought you were saying that, you know, if you leave somewhere, the karmic pattern's going to come with you. But you're saying you can walk away metaphorically from this karmic cycle and just live a different life.
That's exactly right. And of course, you know, the going somewhere else and being somebody else is such a dramatic expression of it. But we could also do it exactly where we are. Right? The things that are making me unhappy where I am are only making me unhappy because I agree to be unhappy when those things are present.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I stop playing the game, they cease to have any power over me. They cease to be problems or issues, and I'm free. But that is, we are so programmed that I can only feel the way circumstances and the voices tell me to feel.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why Yeah, I'm in the deprogramming process.
Precisely so. Learning to turn your attention where you want it to be. And you're really at quite a subtle place in it to be questioning, you know, really? Who says so? Who? That's true? I need to do that? I need to feel that way? That's what's happening to me? Really? Huh, I don't think I'll have that experience then. You'll have a different one. And just in your laugh, I know you went there. Okay, there's that moment of, well, yeah, of course. Of course I can do that. So the voice is saying, this is what you're doing, this is what's happening to you, this is the way you need to feel, although it never says that out loud like that, right? But it mirrors that. Hmm?
Yeah, no, it's helpful just to hear that. I think I might record that myself and have that at the end of the evening. That. So what were the voices trying to tell you today, how you were supposed to feel and think and act?
Precisely. And then as you get more into that and realize that the only reason that's happening to you is that you're going along with the program.
Yeah.
You're passively agreeing to be the person they're telling you you need to be. It really reinforces the commitment to being the person you choose to be.
I like that. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad I called.
Yeah, me too. You're very welcome. Everything that we talk about in practice is helpful for all of us. It is. And that, you know, what you're looking at is so the heart of the recording and listening practice. You know, what do you want your life to be? Who do you want to be? What does your heart want? What do you want your life to stand for? Now, choose that. Be that. Put your attention on that and let that inform every moment of your life. We can do that.
Right. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
You are the light of the world. So shine, shine.
Welcome back to Open Air.
Michael.
That was a fun ad, Sherry.
That was a fun ad, but the sound quality was terrible where I was.
Was it just where
I was?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that it will be
better next time.
I can
time.
Tell you it will be great in the archives.
Okay, good. Yeah, because it is a beautiful song and a great message, and it sounded like it was being chopped to pieces.
Darn.
Yeah.
Darn. That's no good.
Well, we'll work.
And what is good is that we have another caller here.
That is good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey. Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I feel like I'm living Chris's story from the first
caller. Had a little backlash?
Yeah. Oh, just a little. I've been preparing for it, though.
Uh-huh.
Been rubbing my hands together, waiting and waiting, and it arrived.
Uh-huh.
Nice, tidy little package. And I had a guidance call, monthly donor guidance call on the weekend with one of the monks. And I said, I've got 1 foot in the dark room and I've got 1 foot in the light room. And he went, oh, the gray room?
Mm-hmm.
We had a good chuckle about that.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm able to just be with it all. And I know I'm really identified and I know I'm getting, I'm in the midst of a lot of suffering, but I'm really present. It's really getting even more interesting as it evolves.
I'll tell you this. And I probably have before.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the most powerful place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you said. Yeah. Go.
Yeah, because it's all going on.
Yeah.
And you're right there watching it.
Yep.
It doesn't always feel grand.
Never.
Mm-mm. Never. But you're certainly in a place to have great sympathy, great compassion for the human being who have to endure this.
Wow. That's it exactly. Yep.
And
yeah.
You can watch how it's done to him. You can watch how he's been trained to believe it and fall for it and take it on and get involved and take it personally and feel bad.
Yeah.
Powerful place.
Yeah. Everything you just described is exactly the experience. But also, you know, it was the intensity of this backlash was pretty strong, stronger than I've experienced in a while. But the duration was quite short.
Yeah.
And I didn't fail to stop practicing. What I noticed when I was recording today, because I recorded that, I couldn't actually record while I was in it, but I was able to record the guidance call while I was in it.
Uh-huh.
Which is really helpful.
Well, and let's underline that for just a moment, okay?
Okay.
In the midst of it, you kept a commitment to have a guidance call.
Never
okay.
saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's huge because
it
would have probably paid big money to get you not to do that. I mean, that's a dangerous place to be. Having guidance with a monk, holy.
Yeah. And then to just kind of, as we were talking earlier, I just laid it right out exactly what was going on, just step for step, and the monk was saying, "Yep, that's the process," and we just really broke it down, exactly what we were talking about earlier, and yeah, you know, it's so interesting, Sherry. I didn't see keeping that commitment to that guidance call and going through that and recording it and actually talking about it was huge.
Oh my God, yes. Because, as you well know, that's what it's going for. That's what karmic conditioning self-hate is angling for all the time, to get you alone and isolated so that the only thing you have, the only relationship you have is with it.
Yeah.
And every time you reach out like that, you know, do that guidance call into the radio show, I mean, it loses enormously. And the other thing that I would like to underline is at this point in your practice, it knows it can't do an extended campaign.
No. Right.
So it has to just race in and hit you as hard as possible with everything it's got.
Yeah.
And hope that it can strike a fatal blow.
Right. And it doesn't, because you're right. At this point in my practice, I have too many things going on, too much consistency and repetition and daily tools that I use. You're right. It could never have an extended campaign.
Right. Mm-mm.
It would just break it apart.
Which I think is important for all of us to get. In the beginning, in the beginning, we're totally unconscious. So it's just doing whatever it wants to do.
Sure.
Then we start to wake up. And the more we start to wake up, the more subtle it becomes.
Uh-huh.
Right now, it's just delivering these kind of, what is that called? It's subliminal.
Subliminal.
You know, we're meant never to really hear. We just know by all sorts of signals that we're supposed to feel that way and that it means that and like that. And so it can operate like that for a long time. Then we start catching on to the more subtle aspects of it. And that's when it'll come in with a big, sustained blast.
Yeah.
You know, it's just gonna hammer away at you for long enough that most people will knuckle under. But you didn't.
Nope.
Okay, and so each time we come through it, we're way stronger, it's way weaker.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so now it actually doesn't have the strength to come at you in that sustained assault sort of way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's when it goes to the bursts. It can only hold out for so long. Now, of course, you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway for everybody else who's listening in. What it counts on then is that you will get to such a good place in your practice that you'll decide to cruise. And that's where it starts. Lining up the troops around the perimeter.
Thanks for that reminder, because it just gave me more resolve to, like, wow. And the tweet that really reminded it was the mentor is 24/7, 365.
Uh-huh.
And the tweet, and I saw also in that tweet is, that's what conditioning is too.
Oh, yes.
Right?
And louder.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So my practice has to just be as relentless as we've talked about so many times as conditioning.
Yes. And the thing that that we know, at you know, in the beginning, we'll fall for the voice that goes, oh, my God, do I have to do this for the rest of my life? But as soon as we get it, that practice is so much happier than not practicing. Forget you know, it's so much happier than living your life with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Yes, that goes without saying. But it's so much happier than not practicing.
Yes.
That, yes. Yes. You know, I fall in love. It's a great relationship. No, I actually don't want not to have it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
No, I actually wouldn't rather be alone. Thank you. No,
I
actually wouldn't rather be with somebody miserable.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Yep.
You know.
And I just so appreciated someone echoed it earlier that the email class started today, because I came out of it, Tuesday? I came out of it Monday night, and I was in it for 3 days. And I came out Monday night, and then the email class this morning, first thing I did when I hit my computer, I went to Hotmail, and there was the email class, and I'm like, yeah, beautiful. And then I just thought, well, I'll call in. I kind of called in quite late, so I'm quite surprised I'm on the call, but I'm just like, oh, what a bonus. I'm on the radio show as well. So it's like, okay, conditioning lines it all up. Now I'm lining it all up on this side.
Yes.
I'm lining up the awareness troops, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I'm glad, and it's great to hear from you, and I'm glad.
Thank you so much for the encouragements, and we'll be looking forward to the next month sharing emails together.
Yes, 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 indeed. Thank you, Todd.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Todd. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Hi.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Jodine from San Francisco.
Well, hello, Jodine.
Hello, I've been a stranger, and I'm calling in to put that right. I don't know why I always get on like the last couple minutes, but this has happened a couple of times. So I was calling a lot for support before the deepening practice retreat this summer. And then when I got back from the retreat, kind of life hit me with like a ton of bricks. It felt like just, you know, things that I had been able to put on hold for a month, but then they just like,
yeah.
They
were waiting for you.
But I have to say, they were waiting for me and they were like getting juicy. But I also think I was experiencing a bit of a, like a subtle backlash from the retreat, which ties into seeing something karmic for me that's really, really big in my life. And conditioning was trying to convince me, like, no, don't talk about that, like, because it's, like, so big that I have, it feels like even though I've been dealing with it my whole life, I just started dealing with it somehow. And, like,
yep, I know exactly.
I'm not allowed to talk about stuff that is not, like, all worked out, you know. But anyhow, the gist of this karma is that conditioning tells me that I should be the boss in the work that I do. And there's all these threads going through that, which I see, and I'm so grateful for the practice, and I'm especially grateful for this very call tonight, because it was so right on for me, like the notion that the issues that are issues for me are issues because they're issues for me, but I could go somewhere else and be somebody else, you know, if I wanted that, if I just put my effort there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see is that, you know, I've been over and over and over again in these situations where I'm either the boss and things get really, really messed up, or I can't be the boss for like all these crazy reasons, and like yada yada, like yada yada yada. It just goes on and on and on, here's a practice piece of this. I'm trying to decide whether to apply to a program that would kind of make it more likely for me to be able to be a boss of something in the future. And I'm in this weird karmic trap, it feels like, where I can't be the boss where I am now. There was so much confusion about it. I decided to do the thing where for a day I decide, no, I'm not going to apply for it. And then for a day I do, yes, I am going to apply for it. And that helped me because I realized that the pull towards yes and the pull towards no are two key sub-personalities of mine who battle over this in different ways my whole life. And this is like
They would battle over kind of any content or specifically this boss?
Well, it's like it's bigger than just being the boss. So the two pieces of me is a scientist person and a mystic person. And the
Let me guess. The mystic isn't really interested in being the boss.
Oh, no, no. No, the mystic, the mystic is interested in all sorts of stuff, like kind of all over the map. And does the mystic want to be a boss? You know, that's a good question that I might just take and chew on for a bit and let you know about.
Yes, I would say probably wants to be the boss of oneself.
Yes, but, I definitely have seen that, and I've been guided towards that kind of thing. So yes, you can plug in different kinds of content, but the mystic and the scientist in me will have different views on it. And one of the things that I realized that seems kind of big is that because of my own natural talents, whenever I did anything scientific, just like for the pure joy of it, I would meet with success kind of from the external world point of view. You know, when I did scientific things, I succeeded at them up to a certain point. And what I think is happening is that conditioning, it's conditioning's thing that I need to be the boss. And because I've been really successful in science stuff, and I could potentially be a boss in the science realm, so conditioning wants me to keep going to the science.
Yeah, now I'm not clear, and we may have to continue this conversation.
Okay, right.
I'm not clear why, what about being a boss? I mean, what does that mean? Or why would a person, what would that do? What would that, you know, is it somebody who wants more responsibility? Is it somebody who wants more power? Is it somebody who wants more money? Is it somebody who wants more recognition?
That's a really good question, and I've absolutely looked at the different facets of that, and certainly recognition is part of it, but another part of it is getting to this life content thing where I could just go do something else if I wanted to, so why am I staying here and suffering, is because I work in an organization where my conditioning says that the boss is not doing it right. And if I were the boss, things would be right around here, kind of. Like, this person is really really involved in standards and people meeting standards or not meeting the standards. And that things, that if you choose to do something as a person or as an organization, you should do it right. And what I found myself in is a lot of organizations where I'm not in charge, and I feel like the people in charge are doing it wrong. And I see that conditioning loves to have me in those situations, because guess what? I will suffer intensely in those situations.
And so now, as a student of Zen awareness practice, do you think it might be more helpful to put your time and attention and energy into ceasing to suffer rather than changing job titles?
Well, yes, that has been, I have kind of been
That would
forced...
be the mystic's view, right?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. The mystic. Oh, yeah. And the mystic loves kind of putting her spin on all of this stuff. And I have to say, Sherry, that once something's really interesting about my life for the past like 5 years, is that I've been forced to to do that in a way because of stuff that happened to me professionally, I have been unable to find a job anywhere else from where I am now. Like doing work that's like any way related to what I'm doing. Like it's either I need to like completely change my field or somehow fix all these bridges that got burned or something, you know, to find another job in my field. And so I've basically been stuck in what I feel like is this karmic trap where I need to face this suffering head on and say, where is it all, you know, what is this? Because this is what has been on my plate.
Yes, because I would suggest, and then I would suggest also that Michael is probably over there going, these gals need to wrap this up.
Wrap it up, okay.
Yeah, I would suggest that what's going on is that this particular piece of content, a la our original conversation, I think, on this show, this particular piece of content has become so real that there is the ability to lose sight of the possibility of awakening and ending suffering in this lifetime. And it sounds like the position that you're in right now would be just an extraordinary opportunity to face these beliefs, assumptions, opinions, standards, philosophies, okay, that contribute to getting a human being to believe this life content, this stuff, actually matters and is worth giving a life for, rather than, you know, these people are paying me to do a job, and it's and I can do the job, and I do it really well. And as I'm there, I can watch all of this karmic conditioning come up and have a chance to get to the other side of it, drop it, let it go, be free of it, and then see what life would like for me to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Just something to consider.
All right. I'll take that on as my homework. Thank you very much. Thanks for the extra time.
You are so welcome. Keep in touch.
Good to talk.
Okay.
Okay, I will.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Always a pleasure and a privilege, Sherry.
Always a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Okay, talk to you then.
All right. Good night.
Good night.